Everybody grab a seat for LA Live.
LA Live.
Western Ave and Harvard Street for LA Live.
LA Live.
When the weight of the world's exhausting, take a ticket to Lower Austin.
LA, LA, LA Live.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to our live action demonstration proving once and for all that climate change is real. Because seriously, what are the chances that we program 4 outdoor summer variety shows and not even one of them gives us a slight whiff of sunshine and we have to hold 2 of them indoors? Although we actually do have some sunshine tonight. I wrote this script earlier today. But no matter, here we are inside the cozy PRX podcast garage and we are bringing the sunshiny good vibes to your faces for our 4th and final episode of Boston's one and only live old-timey radio show / podcast, co-produced by the PRX Podcast Garage and featuring a plethora of our fair region's top performers. We call it LA Live!
LA, LA, LA Live!
My friends, give it up for LA Live's theme song composer, our one and only house one-man band, and definitely don't call him Beer Man, the irrepressible Mr. Phil Berman! Folks, my name is Jason McCool, and I am the head of arts and culture over at Aeronaut Brewery in Somerville, Mass. We have a killer show lined up for you tonight, but before I introduce our special guests, and since tomorrow night is our last regularly scheduled night of the season out at Boston's original musical beer garden, I want to take this moment to say thank you to everyone who has played a part. That lighting cue is lovely, by the way. In Aeronaut Alston's 4th season at Zone 3 in Lower Alston. We started this series in true DIY fashion during the early summer of 2016 in yon parking lot. And it's been a real joy for me and for all of us to watch it grow and see new people discover it. This season alone, we have featured close to 300 musicians on our stage. Let's face it, my friends, this city is not always the easiest place to make cool new things happen. And there are so many people involved in pulling this series and this show off. Let's give them a big round of applause. And let's also remember that we could not make this happen without your support. So if you are here, give yourselves a big round of applause for getting out off your collective couches and supporting artists with your presence.
Jason, this is usually the part of the script where I butt in and snarkily correct you on something, which I do love to do. But frankly, given these touching words of gratitude and humility, I just cannot.
Thanks, Phil.
But I only quibble with your use of the word plethora in your opening, which is one of those words that college students like to use in order to sound fancy, like prevalent, or exemplify, illustrious, preeminent, utilize. You know, words that when you say them out loud in an actual sentence, they make you sound like a complete dork. Dork words. You know.
I'll take that into consideration, Phil. No more dork words. However, since this is our last show of the season, I won't get a chance to utilize any of this illustrious and preeminent advice you've so prevalently exemplified. Until just maybe next season, if we have one, would anyone come back? It's so perfect because my notes say hold for riotous applause. Anyway, folks, though the weather may be dreary, tonight's show is most definitely packed with sunshine and awesomeness. Curated by our season partner's comedy party, the very funny Laura Saverse is here. Give it up. Storyteller Bart Thompson is here. Boston cocktail guru, or guress, and author, actually we said guru is a non-gendered term, is and author, published author, Kitty Amon is here. LA Live's resident improv comedy troupe Bodega featuring Gerald Mackey and Tim Booker is here. Sadie Gustafson Zook is here. And joining us from Nashville, Tennessee, Jay Edwards is here. Folks, our first guest tonight is an award-winning, shape-shifting, multi-instrumentalist and songwriter whose music spans folk and jazz, and whose witty and charming songs provide a well-needed breath of optimism to audiences across the U.S., including a performance on Prairie Home Companion with Garrison Keillor. She holds a master's from the Longy School of Music at Bard College, and when she is not working at the historic Club Passim, she spends her days scatting, thinking about being in nature, listening to music, and trying out new pens. We've presented her a number of times, and we adore her. Please give it up for the wonderful Miss Sadie Gustafson-Zook.
Hello. Well, I'm so happy to be here, and I also have with me Mari Campbell, the esteemed harp player. So we're going to start with a song that I wrote. One day I was walking down the street and I heard some birds and I thought I was getting catcalled and I got very angry. So this song is called Birdsong. Birdsong makes me squirm, 'cause I've learned to assume it's from a man standing by the road, sticking toe, making all kinds of demands. Smile, sugar, sweet, eyes concrete, I stare intensely, longing to appear so austere with a pinch of strong and angry. I like looking bad like a bag, feeling the security of thinking no one's there who would care or make remarks at me. When I'm feeling fine, I resign to the fact that there are eyes who won't let me be as carefree as they were when they were nine. I could be safe inside my skin. I was nine when I skated by, and a big white truck stopped by me. Two grown men were there, I was scared, and they whistled at my hiney. Please stop staring, it would be one thing if I thought they knew me, but I don't think they do, and it's rude, I should know 'cause I like staring. Thank you. I felt within your arms. You're surprising me with the things I feel that I never felt before. You have listening ears and you yearn to hear all I have to say, even when I am unsure. You lean in more. I have never known such a tenderness as I feel when you're around. You seem confident that the time we spend is like time on holy ground. And I don't know how you could know by now that I would be worth it in you, but not feel bound. But I feel found. And last night I cried when I heard a girl talk about her love. She
love on out there. If I hadn't met you and I never knew the way your soft eyes would melt into my face, that'd be a disgrace. And you are just who I need. And
Gustafson Zook and Mary Campbell. Give it up! Woo! I can't even talk after that. It was so beautiful. What a beautiful way to start this show out. My friends, we are so lucky here in Greater Boston because not only do we have some of the best musicians in the country, I think Boston's comedy scene is seriously one of the best in the country. And we have our next two gentlemen joining us from Bodega, who is our resident comedy troupe, which is so freaking cool. They have been killing it on all of our shows this summer. It is really my pleasure and my honor to introduce you to Jeral and Tim of Bodega. Give it up!
Hey everybody, how y'all doing tonight? I'm going to need a little bit more than this. It's going to take a long time if you guys don't. How y'all doing tonight? All right. Sweet. So my name is Tim. This is Jeral. As you just heard, we're part of Bodega. So happy to be here tonight. Bodega is a group that's all about inclusion and just diversity and doing such a great job in the community, bringing people together, After all the night, however, we have a bit of a competition, and we need your help settling some things. So we are good friends, but we're just very different. You know?
Airing out our dirty laundry.
I feel like
right now
it's time to just be, like, there's an audience, they can help us settle this. Would you mind helping us settle something really quickly?
Please.
All right. Who is the better, the cooler bodega member? All right. So we're going to do some comedy right now, tell some jokes. Just listen to what we say, and at the end of it, we'll ask you just to vote what you like most. All right? So
I'm very nervous. I'm very nervous, Tim.
I'm setting you up for failure, my friend.
Yes, you are.
So the game is called 185, and it's going to go like this. I'll get a suggestion from you in a second. We'll say 185 blanks. We'll walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve your kind here." And then the blanks say, "Why is that?" And then the bartender gives a joke. Okay? Does that make sense? It'll make sense more in a second once we do it. You ready?
I don't think that made sense. I don't think the
you're just saying that because you're about to lose this competition.
I'm trying to get in your head
I'm ready to just get this started. So everybody, just shout out in a quick second. I just had some kombucha. What's something that you like to eat or drink to feel healthy?
Pickles.
185 pickles walk into a bar.
185 pickles walk into the bar. The bartender says, "We don't serve your kind here." The pickle says, "Why not?" And the bartender says, "No deal."
That's the best you got, my friend.
Top that.
185 pickles walk into a bar. The bartender says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve pickles here." Pickles say, "Why not?" The bartender says, "Because you ain't got no green." It's pickles.
Okay, right? I think I won that round.
Come on. It's a classy joke.
Green is a color. What's something you would find in the grocery store?
Canned tomatoes.
Yes.
Okay, canned tomatoes.
Yes. 185 canned tomatoes walk into the bar. The bartender says, "We don't serve your kind here." The canned tomatoes say, "Why not?" And the bartender says, "Because you're too acidic."
Ooh.
Okay, that's a groaner. That's a groaner.
That's a good one. You know, I honestly don't have anything else for that. But I feel like in the spirit of the game, I have to give a joke, too.
You do have to give a joke.
All right. 185 canned tomatoes walk into a bar. The bartender says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve your kind here." Canned tomatoes say, "Why not?" Bartender says, "Because we're not open." Probably should have chose a different game.
That was an uncanny joke.
Oh, there it is. There it is. I feel like he's beating me at my own game, folks. Oh man. All right, let's do one more. Canned tomatoes is a food. You put tomatoes in spaghetti.
I love how you pronounce spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
Just hit every syllable.
Spaghetti. Yeah. You might find spaghetti in the north end of Boston. What else might you find in the north end of Boston?
Molasses. I've been on that tour before. I'm just going to go there.
Molasses?
Something about the North End really triggered this pun.
Mm.
185 molasses walked into the bar. The bartender said, "We don't serve your kind here." The molasses says, "Why not?" And because this is the North End, the bartender says, "Because you're too dark."
Mm.
Oh.
I was going to do that one, too.
Is it a lie?
185 molasses walk into a bar. The bartender says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve molasses here." Molasses is like, "Why not?" He's like, "Don't you get it? I just told you. Why are you so slow?" I just won the crowd back. I think on that note, we're going to end the game, everybody.
You did.
All right.
Mental note, no jokes about racism in Boston. Ah!
Yeah, I don't got time for that. Yeah, got to vote, don't you? Okay, if you like Jerrall's vote, just give me like a big clap or give me some sound. If you like Jerrall. If you like the styles of Tim.
Is that a tie?
I think
that's a tie.
All right. Next time, Jerrall, I'll get you next time.
So we're going to do some two-person scenes. We heard that there's a wonderful author that's coming up later tonight that will be talking about her book about alcohol. I'm trying to get some of this right.
And amazing women throughout history.
Yes, you actually spoke to them. Thank you, Tim. I'm glad. But what's your favorite cocktail?
Manhattan.
Oh, Manhattan is a wonderful drink. I believe it consists of the smells of New York City.
Yes.
Taxi cab sounds and street carts. Okay. Just lots of street food.
These are the ingredients in the Manhattan?
These are the ingredients of the Manhattan. I have it all the time when I go to the bar. Is that right, sir?
We'll take that. I'm trying to go to West 74th Street in Hollis.
Oh, perfect, buddy. Why don't you hop in the back of the car? I got some free space.
Oh, man. That's what I love about this new taxi cab service. You just walk up to any car and they'll let you in.
Hey, now, I was planning on going to the grocery store, but since you asked, I'm under contract to just open up the back seat and let you hop on in.
Oh, you're so nice. You're so nice. I need to hire some men for my daughter's wedding. We're having a trouble with the shuttle. Can I count on you?
Oh, yeah, why not? You know, it's actually my daughter's birthday as well.
That's why
I was going to the store
way.
To get some cake and some ice cream. But, yeah, I'll just have to give her a call, let her know that I'm not coming.
You would not go to your daughter's birthday.
I'm under contract.
Just to bring me to Hollis in 174.
Yeah. You see, once I signed up for a contract, that means that I have to do anything that a customer asks. When somebody comes up to my window and asks for something, I kind of have to go about doing what they want.
Anything they want.
Anything. I pretty much have no money left because people just come up and ask me for $5 all the time.
Still waiting for my paycheck, Mr. Robinson.
Oh, you know, we've had some budgetary problems. Mm. They gave the CEO, I mean me, they gave me a big bonus, and now we just don't have anything right now. Just hang in there next week.
So the quarterly numbers came in, and I had a chance to read them too, and it said that we're doing only 2% worse than we were last quarter, and that means that I don't get paid, but you get a nice bonus.
Yeah.
Mr. Robinson?
Jeremy, let me tell you, I know you're an intern. Let me tell you how things work around here.
Mm.
When we don't do well, you don't do well. But when we don't do well, I still do well. It's called capitalism.
I know I'm a freshman in college, okay? And I know that I haven't understood much of the world or seen much of it, but I still feel like you're exploiting me and my skills. I may be the coffee bringer to you, Mr. Robinson, but I still take my work very seriously.
Look, I believe in an American dream.
Mm.
And part of the American dream is putting enough barriers in place to teach you what hard work looks like and how it doesn't pay off.
Mm.
If I gave you everything, you want to have free college tuition, be debt-free? You can't live like that, Jeremy. You got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, my friend.
Pull myself up by my bootstraps and get nothing, which is literally what you just said.
You don't believe in American dream, it sounds like. You don't believe in democracy. This world was built on hard work and dedication. People just like my family, we traveled here from Ellis Island.
I can see the resemblance.
Oh.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll see you in a couple of days.
Oh, so glad your in-laws are gone.
Oh, man. Every time they come to visit, they just stay a little bit too long. I'm sorry, honey. I know you want to have your free time, but when they're here, they're just all up in our space.
Yeah. I feel like you got to put your foot down every time before they come. You say, you know what, I'm going to let them know that this is our house and our rules and they can't stay. And then you back out at the last minute every time.
Well, usually something comes up. It wasn't my fault that it was a thunderstorm and I needed my mommy to comfort me.
We've been married for 5 years and you still don't let me comfort you in your darkest times, Timothy.
You don't do it like mommy does, Jerrell.
See?
She holds me and
tells me that everything's going to be okay. She rocks back and forth a little bit like I like, and she strokes my hair.
You're number one.
You don't stroke my hair like that.
I was okay. You know, you wanted your mom to come on a honeymoon. You said, oh, when I'm post-coital, I just need her to be there. And I went along
She tells
along
me I did
it.
A good job. You never tell me I do a good job.
Is that all it really takes? You just want to be affirmed?
I just want somebody to affirm me. To hold me and rock me back and forth and stroke my hair just like I like and say,
baby, you're doing good.
Oh.
You are the best husby one could ask for.
Oh.
After three marriages.
Here's your ring back. I'm done. No more. No more, Brandon. Don't try that song and dance with me. I know what's up this time.
I was
going
to have to come up with some story to get this outcome, but you just did it for me.
Wait, what? You wanted the ring back?
Yes.
Oh, I thought I was breaking up with you.
No. I have student loan debt to pay, and I'm just at my wit's end, so I need this ring back to pay off Sally Mae.
You would break up everything that we have just to be able to pay off your student loans faster?
No, I don't want to.
Is that what you're saying?
I don't want to break up with you. I love you. I just needed the ring back. That's it.
Feels like you don't love me. Feels like the ring is more important to you. Anyway, I'm still breaking up with you.
You are such a consumerist, Brandon. Why must everything be about money with you? Huh?
It's not all about money. It's about our union. And that ring symbolized our union. That I don't even want anymore, but now I'm upset because you don't want it either. Or the ring, that is. I feel like you don't love me. I feel like you just love student loans. Sally Mae.
You really think I would put Sally Mae above our relationship? Then you're goddamn right.
Thank you, Ruben Bodega.
Give it up for Jerome Mackey and Tim Booker of Bodega. It has been a pleasure working with them and the rest of their fantastic crew all summer long, and we appreciate the hell out of them. Folks, our next guest is a streetwise Boston native, a devoted wife, a working mother of two, a storyteller and stand-up comic who brings her hardworking and heartfelt approach to life to stages across the country. She is a member of Mass Mouth and performs regularly on the WGBH program Stories from the Stage. And this year, she was featured as a Best of Boston comic at CBS Scene and Best of Laugh Boston Showcase. Give it up for a city kid who's seen it all and can't wait for more, Laura Saverse!
I hate that bio so much. It makes me want to poke my eyeballs out. Anyway, so that's me. I am a mom, which you knew immediately because of this, and also I have a little bit of pink eye. Don't shake my hand. that works too. Okay, that was, got obscene. No, okay. It's just an instinctive, no, sorry. Okay, so I am a mom. I have two kids. I have a boy and I have a girl. It recently occurred to me that one of them is my favorite. And the other one can go fuck herself. I know that's aggressive, but you don't live with this bitch. She's seven. She's super smart. I'm trying to be like a really strong feminist ally for her, but she's just making it super difficult. Very recently we were in the kitchen and we have all our best fights in the kitchen, and she's a super smart little kid, and I love that about her so much. It's one of the few things. And so we were in the kitchen fighting because she had painted an uncommissioned mural on the wall. And I was like, hey, Jenny, we rent. And she's like, so? And I'm like, so? And she's like, whatever. And I'm like, no, you need to go to your room now. That's how that works. And she was like, I will go to my room. My room is my utopia. And she looks me dead in my face and goes, and you are my dystopia. Wow. Yeah. And I was like, I am from Dorchester. So I don't know what you just said. Back in May, she developed a British accent. And I was like, hey, where'd you get that? And she's like, Harry Potter. And I'm like, ugh, Potter. And she's become really pretentious, but it's weird. It's like a weird accent. Like sometimes she's super high and mighty, like she's like Queen's British. And then other times she's like, in East London, I like very angry about Brexit. Like it's a very, oh, it's super annoying. So we're on the Cape Memorial Day weekend and we have to go home. And my son, who's really sweet, total opposite of her, we're sitting there and she says, I don't want to go home. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And my son goes, Jenny, you know, like wherever we are, that's our home. That's home. And I'm like, oh, I love you. And she goes, ugh, you think you're deep, but you're not. And I was like, oh, you're such a bitch. At that same meal, she had ordered mozzarella sticks. That's her new thing. And I had said to her, I'm like, hey, Jenny, could I please have one of your mozzarella sticks? And she's like, I'm saying yes because I don't want to ruin our relationship. I know how you feel about food. Okay, that bombed. All right. No, that's it. That was it. No, I appreciate that you didn't laugh at a fat joke. No, but it's still a funny joke. All right, anyway. We're going to move on. She's a bitch. Okay, so so my son, as I mentioned, he is the complete opposite. He is the sweetest, kindest. He's just this. He's really big and he's blonde. He has these two huge front teeth. We're hoping to God he grows into. And he's just, he's awesome. He's a little dumb. He's like, he's just a kind of a big, fat, dumb motherfucker. Like, he just, but I love him. He's so sweet. And very recently, I went to my mom's house to pick him up one afternoon. And he jumps in front of me. He does this thing where he's always jumping in front of me. It's like this. He's like, mama. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. So anyway, he does that. And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, guess how many hot dogs I had today? And I'm like, well, just because you're asking, I already know it's too many. And he's like, yeah, 5. I'm like, yeah, too many. So I turn to my mother and I go, Mom, come on, what are you doing? And of course, she's like, well, listen, I'm the grandmother. When he's over here, he can eat whatever he wants. And I'm like, okay, number one, too many nitrates. And number two, I'm trying to keep him chubby, not morbidly obese. Like, help me out here. He came home from school one afternoon. He's like, hey, Mom, have you heard this? And I go, this what? And he goes, this nuts. And I go, Teddy, come here. I go, look at me. This is how you do that. You go, hey, Mom, have you seen these? And I go, these what? And then you go, these nuts. And he's like, oh, all right. And I go, you need to work this out with your friends, not me. Like, I should not be telling you this. Oh, I was really annoyed. He's actually at the, like, we're on the precipice, I guess, of puberty. And I know that because he said to me, I think I'm going through puberty. And I said, how do you know? And he said, because I get like 6 boners a day. And of course, I'm trying to be engaged and communicative. And I was like, oh, what causes the boners? He's like, nothing. And I'm like, I think you have a long life for that ahead of you, but I don't have a penis, so I don't know. Which led me to our next situation, which I go into his room one night, and he's like, Mom, it's hot as balls in here. And I go, Ted, you can't say hot as balls. And he's like, oh, okay, Mom, how hot are balls? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Because I'm going to state the obvious, because I don't have balls. A few weeks after that, when he says to me, Mom, I just discovered 2 hairs on my giblets. I go back to calling them balls. Giblets is flower somehow. I don't know why, it just is. So we've had a few incidences with this whole sex stuff that's happening now. The first incident was we were sitting down to dinner, eating chicken because that's all I make, because that's all I know how to make. So I know that's what we're eating. And he looks up from his plate and he's like, Mom, do people make love? And I was like, I hate that phrase. say fuck or get out. Like, I just, I know it's a lot, but I can't. And I go, Teddy, come on, man. Where did you hear that? And he's like, everywhere. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you guys are running around the schoolyard talking about making love. That's fucking weird. I know he didn't get it from me because I say boning or pound town, so. the next incident was... I come home one afternoon, minding my own business, spend a lot of time in my house trying to mind my own business. I like, don't make like direct eye contact with anyone. I'm just always kind of like, if I don't look at them, they won't bother me. So I come in and my husband's like, hey, I need to talk to you. I just wanted to fill you in. Earlier today, Teddy told me that he came home from school and all day at school, actually, he had been thinking about girls' butts. So when he got home, he grabbed the iPad and he Googled Kim Kardashian's butt. And I was like, okay, no problem. Who amongst us? You know, so. And I said, you had a talk, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, I took care of everything. And I'm like, awesome. And he goes, yep, I showed him how to clear the history. I was like, you're a bad parent. And he's like, yeah. You're a bad parent. I'm like, no, you're the worst parent. Okay, that's stupid. Okay, anyway. So the next incident that occurred was one morning, I wake up, again, minding my own business. Teddy does the jump. Mama. I think I figured out what sex is. And I was like, good. Someone around here should know. And he goes, it came to me in a dream. And I'm like, I'm all ears. He's like, I'm in the forest. And I'm like, I like your vibe. He's like, I'm a fox. I'm like, that's your spirit animal. And he's like, there was a girl fox. I'm like, you might be straight. We'll see. He's like, I see her and I start running after her. And I go, I'm going to stop you right there. Okay. We don't run after fellow human beings. Okay. We stand perfectly still and we have kind eyes. He's like, I catch up to her. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, and then I grab her. I go, ah. To stop you again. And I go, listen to me, no grabby without something called consenty, okay? And he's like, okay, I got it. And he goes, and then I did this thing, and this was the day that a little bit inside of me died. He proceeded to go, I got up on like her hips and I did this thing like this. Here's the thing, you guys. I don't know if you've ever had a fat 9-year-old do a pelvic thrust. I don't recommend it. It's actually scarring. But more importantly, the tongue. I don't. In all my years of being on this earth and recounting sexual experience, I have never not once had my tongue. It's always firmly in my mouth. Like, I have never. I don't know if you gentlemen are born just like, like what. But I have never said to one of my girlfriends, like, yeah, I climbed up on that dick and was like, come on. Are you kidding me? So gross. Anyway. All right, kid stuff aside, a little bit about myself. I went to an inner city Boston public high school. I know that's shocking because, like my daughter, my accent sounds more like the Queen's English. But I did. And in the 10th grade, I used to sit in the back of my Latin class with my best friend forever, Tracy. We're not even Facebook friends now because she was a whore. So we... not allowed to say that now, you guys. Don't do that. I'm old. So we would sit in the back of the classroom, and we would gossip and catch up on the weekend, and we would just not pay attention to our teacher. And our poor teacher was, oh, I felt so bad for her. Her name was Mrs. Prince. She's long dead. Don't worry about it. And she was... like 4'7", maybe, and she was definitely around 350, and she was very angry, perfectly understandable, and she was asthmatic, okay? So instead of yelling at us from the front of the classroom, don't look concerned, I said, she's gone. And instead of yelling at us from the front of the classroom like a normal human being, she would storm all the way to the back of the room, and then by the time she got there, she'd be half dead. She'd be like, do you ladies have something you want to share with the group? And of course, I'm a coward, and also she's half dead, so I would just be like, no, thank you so much for asking. Really appreciate that. But here's the thing. I wish so bad that back then I had the balls just once, or the giblets, to just once stand up and just be like, why, yes, I do have something I'd like to share with the group. I'm just now hearing that on Friday night, Kevin finger-fucked Charlene. We said finger-fuck in my time, very crude. I think the kids today are saying finger-bang or finger-blast. To me, that's super aggressive, right? Gross. My husband thinks he's very funny, and he designated Fridays as Finger Bang Friday, and I was like, two things about that, Josh. I'm like, number one, not a real thing, and number two, I'm not doing that to you again. Thank you guys so much.
The very funny Laura Silvestre, give it up. Wow. Who's going to follow that? Folks, I know who's going to follow that. We featured him last show, and we simply cannot end this season without hearing his beautiful musical stylings one more time, or maybe two more short times, I think. Give it up for LA Live's house musician, our good friend, Mr. Phil Berman.
Hi, hi, hi. Wow. What a beautiful time we just had. This song is a sort of a spin on an old jazz standard called St. James Infirmary, but I wanted it to be gayer and more sinister, and so I retitled it, and it's now called If You Want to Be My Lover. Yesterday they found my lover with the golden hair. When they told me he was dead, how I sighed and hanged my head. Outliving your lover's a burden to bear. An hour ago they found my lover with the fiery hair. Though the news was no surprise, how the tears flowed out my eyes to show I'm a lover with someone who cared. Well, what's to uncover in the language of a lover alone in the night? What went unstated got a little complicated between bark and bite. To hell if I'm right. And now I heard they found my lover. My lover with the raven hair. I was told he'd heard it said what became of gold and red. So I smothered my lover and now we're square. My lover, and feel my fingers through your hair. I can hold you through the nights in the cell of bars and stripes. Just know, as my lover, you better beware. Just know, as my lover, you'd better.
Thank you. I'm going to do one more track. That track is going to be on my next record, which is we're almost so close. Hopefully it'll be coming out in the winter. It's going to be called Play the Part. And this is the title track from my first record, which is on Spotify. It's called The Battle of Bunker Hill. And if you were on the tour that talked about the Boston molasses disaster, that might have been me on a boat writing this song about being a Boston Harbor tour guide.
Baby, go to bed. I'm in different time zones. I'm in different time zones now. Somehow, you can rest your head. I am in different time zones. I'm in different time zones now. Somehow, my open heart is overfilled with every thought that won't sit still. A battle fought on Bunker Hill. Somehow, I am in different time zones. I'm in different time zones now. Somehow, my empty heart recalls this thrill, this happiness imposed by will. I've gotta get off Bunker Hill. Get me back to home terrain, somewhere I can finally shed my second skin. Little lies in little games, as I play and wonder when my truth begins. I'm in different time zones now.
Thank you.
Phil Berman! Phil, I have to say that I could not picture doing this show, Lower Allston Live, without this man. He is this show. So
aww,
thank you so much
show.
For everything that you've
no,
done
this
summer.
Show.
No, you are!
No, you're the show.
No, you are!
Aw, thank you, Jason.
Folks, our next guest is a storyteller and a Nebraska native who lives in Dorchester now. He is the host and producer of Now Listen Here, the best damn storytelling show in Boston. He has been storytelling for his entire life to anyone who will listen or even stand still. He is a teacher during the day, and he is thrilled to be here tonight. Please give it up for Bart Thompson.
You know, there are some days where you get to the end of the day and you realize, like, wow, today was really awful. This day it was apparent a little earlier. So I spent some time earlier in my life as a mascot of sorts for Dunkin' Donuts coffee. So a series of bad decisions led me to a term where I was required to dress as a 6-foot-tall coffee cup in public. And the good thing about those kinds of jobs is that they literally mask the shame. So I mean, I have been embarrassed in front of thousands of people in baseball stadiums. I have been kicked by kids at football games. It's like the end of Groundhog Day where Bill Murray says, I've been shot, stabbed, electrocuted, I've jumped off buildings, and every day I wake up and I'm in this goddamn costume. So one day I had just broken up with a girlfriend. And we were living together, and I had to pack up all my stuff and move out. In the middle of this process, I had to go to work. I had to go smear whatever dignity I had left on the pavement of a parade. And this parade was a Little League opening down in Warren, Rhode Island. And so parade is kind of like a very liberal use of the word. They literally just stopped traffic so that people could walk down the street. And in preparation for this, you know, I don't drive in the costume. That would be dangerous. But I had to change in the back of a van that was clearly not made for somebody to change into a 6-foot-tall coffee cup. Because immediately I'm banging my head on the roof of this thing. And it's with every pound, it's like I can hear the refrain. Why? 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 How? And, you know, I get dressed, I'm going to bring my A game. I'm going to do the best I can to make this a great experience for the little leaguers that are getting ready to start their season. And so the back of the door pops open, and I hop out, and I kind of tilt my head around the back of the van, and I see a six-year-old or so. And they're great because they don't have to suspend disbelief. They're like, that's a fucking coffee cup. That's for real. I'm going to go high five. And they will high five, and it's amazing. But as you get to like 9, 10, 11, 12, the age of reason, that doesn't cut the mustard anymore. So they like to start, apparently before games, they play another game called Kick the Cup. And I don't know the rules, but I know that when you spin around real quick to see who kicked you, you lose. And I lost several times that morning. So I'm already just like, I'm a shell of a person, and I'm questioning, you know, major decisions in my life, and now I'm getting kicked by 10-year-olds, and then the parade starts. So the streets were pretty narrow as it is, but they literally just stop traffic. So you have cars parked on the right side of the road, traffic stopped on the left, a team of 10-year-olds in front of you, a team of 11-year-olds behind you, and there's literally nowhere to go. So I feel another gentle foot to the back of the cup, and I hear a coach like tell somebody like they really shouldn't do that, but in the tone that says, "Go right ahead." And at one point between kicks, I see a parent over on the side, and I'm going to go for the energy boosting high five, and I go over, and I have to look through my armpit because you can't see through the face, and I go over armpit out, and I go for a high five, and there's no response. There's no hand in the air for me to connect to, and it's like she knows I'm in a terrible spot, and she's enjoying it too much to help out, and I start walking as though I was having a stroke. My arms are kind of dangling at the sides, my feet are dragging on the pavement. I've beginning to like a tear is silently rolling down my cheek again. Shame hidden behind a smiling painted face. And we get down towards the field. And in the time of the walk, which is about four blocks, the sobbing has become audible. It's okay. It's fine now. But so I tell my boss, who suddenly reappears out of nowhere. And by the way, my boss was 5 years younger than me. So there's that. Yeah, he knows. And I'm just like begging, like, can we just get out of here as soon as possible? And he's like, Noah, we're going to have a great day. We're just going to hand out these Red Sox schedules. And the kids are going to get introduced and we can get out of here. No big deal. It's awesome. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. So I take every ounce of energy I have left and I start handing out. So the little leaguers are kind of around the dirt of the infield. And the parents are kind of spread out a little further out into the, like, just behind the bases. And I'm getting around second base, and I'm handing out costumes. And some bubba gets to live the dream. And he grabs me in the cup costume, and he squares me up, and he punches me right in the nose. And my arms drop. The schedules drop. They're blowing in the wind. And I have nothing left. And I slowly make my way over to my boss. And he finally, you know, he musters up like the anger that I should have. But I'm on E. And he fires me up. He said, that's bullshit. Nobody should ever have to deal with that. You know, that's not right. And I'm like, okay, all right. I'm going to take this and I'm going to turn it into a positive. And I waddle back across the field in my cup costume and with my pink glove on in the four fingers, by the way, it's a cartoonish glove. And I'm waving it in this guy's face and I am berating him in the cup costume. Like, that is not right. I'm a person. I deserve respect. Not evidently, but, and then I hear like a laugh kind of off through the armpit. And this guy says, hey buddy, it wasn't him. It was me. And so at this point, even my boss kind of acquiesces. And he says, okay, I'll go get the truck. We can leave now. And I spend the next 10 minutes hiding from children behind a lemonade truck. My boss goes and gets the truck, and we pile our things in. And I think I have one last shot to go home and like save this relationship. And it's all I want to do. Like, I just want to be comforted by somebody in this moment. And I get home, and my girlfriend she's showering, and I try to, you know, just sit in the steaming bathroom and tell her about how awful things are, about how terrible my day was. And she requests like a few more minutes of privacy, and I said okay, and I go and I sit in the living room, and when she walks in, I'm sitting on the couch, and I just, all of that pain and anguish and embarrassment, and I let it all go, and I wrap my arms around her, and I'm bawling, you know. I'm 29 years old, and I'm crying like a child, and she pats me on the shoulder. And it's not the kind of pat that you get when someone's trying to tell you that we're going to get through this, we're going to be okay. It's the kind of pat that says, you're going to be fine. Thank you.
Bart Thompson! And you got me on that story. I thought that was like, oh, isn't this a fun story? And then in the end, it's like, oh, God, that is terrible. Wow, you poor, poor man. Clearly, you've pulled it together. My friends, one of the things that we talked about when we first envisioned this show was bringing people in our community to be guests on the show who are making inspiring and seemingly impossible things happen. Our next guest is a woman about town who knows a thing or two about cocktails and now book publishing. She was one of the first extremely friendly people I met when I moved back home to this city, and she is just an absolute delight. My friends, please give a warm welcome to the wonderful Miss Kitty Emmon! Welcome, Kitty.
I thought you'd be closer to me.
Oh, I am spiritually.
Hello, hi everybody.
So, Kitty, I don't have a whit of a note prepared for this. I literally did not even think up one question to ask because I was like, it's Kitty and she's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we're buddies. That's cool. We go way back.
Yeah.
So should I tell you guys a little bit about what the book is about? So the book is called Drinking Like Ladies, 75 Modern Cocktails from the World's Leading Female Bartenders. And the book actually is a project that was a labor of love. It almost didn't get published. It's something that I started working on in 2007. Who could drink then? You know what I mean? It's like a decade, right? And my friend and I started a group here in Boston called LUPEC, which stands for Ladies United for the Preservation of Endangered Cocktails. This was back in the day when the cocktail thing was just getting started, especially in Boston. And Misty Kalkofen is a great friend of mine, and she invited me to come to this women's networking group and just learn about booze and cocktails. And I was like, sure thing. I didn't know anything. I was drinking vodka sodas and Cosmos and thinking I was like very cool at that period. So we educated ourselves about women's history, and we talked about cocktails, and we started a blog. Remember blogs? Who had a blog?
Live journal.
Right? Did you have a live journal? Mine was on Blogger.
I think it did. It's probably still out there somewhere.
I know. I was like, should I just delete that?
Rotting
like,
in what? Cyberspace somewhere.
Don't Google it. Don't look at that. So we started, and then we have a really good friend. I actually used to work in publishing, so I knew a little bit about publishing before I knew about cocktails. And she reached out to us and said, we think this would be a great book. And so we worked on a book proposal, worked so hard, put it all together. And our friend was an agent, and she went out and started pitching it, and we got flatly rejected for 10 years.
Bad.
Do you want to know some of the reasons?
Please.
People didn't get women's history and cocktails. They didn't think that was a thing. Like, they didn't think it went together, which is, you know, I can see your point, kind of. But the reactions we get now are so positive that I'm like, you were wrong. some people didn't get cocktails in general.
And now I go into a bookstore now, and it's like half cocktail books.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, and then it's something that, like, it's like a little bit of a tough thing because it's like, it's one of those things where I think probably many artists or, you know, writers, musicians, everyone's, like, had their share of rejection, right? But this thing of, like, if people tell you no enough times, like, you can kind of start to be like, oh, well, maybe it isn't a thing. Like, maybe a women's history in cocktails isn't a good idea. Okay. and that's okay. But the... you know, at the same time, so my friend Misty is a fantastic, well-known and Boston-famous, actually, she's internationally known now, but she's a very, very well-known bartender, and she was working and just really making a name for herself. So we had all these male peers of hers and ours that are on their second book by now. our book was rejected. There was a book that was published a year later by the same publishing house called Drink Like a Man. That's true.
I think I may have that
it's
one.
It's just like random. It's like whatever, guys.
I actually have that one
you
and your
you
book,
do.
And they're right next to each other
yeah,
on the bookshelf.
It's a cocktail book. Yeah, it's like it's David Wonder. She's a fantastic person and a great writer. So why wouldn't you have that book? But it's just like, okay.
But your book is far more interesting.
Thank you.
Having read it, and if you don't have the book, and I know I'm shamelessly plugging here, but it is really fantastic. What's so fun about it are all the different personalities that you've been able to pull out and shed a spotlight on that are some musicians, some bartenders. Tell us a little bit about...
Yeah, so the format we did was we did 75 unsung women in history, which was probably the hardest. There are some sung women in history, like we have Ruth Bader Ginsburg in here. You all know who she is. But we ended up, and that was tough, trying to figure out who to write about because there's so many incredible women. Like as you start researching, you're like, oh, these stories, you want to tell them, right? So we had 100 to start, then we narrowed it, 200 to start, narrowed it down to 100, now we have 75. And then I highlighted a few to share with you guys, some Jeez. Fabulous musicians. Melba Liston is a woman that I hadn't heard of, and she's an African-American trombonist. She lived from 1926 to 1999. Had you ever heard of her? Because you're a jazz cat, so.
Yeah, I
did
knew
you
her,
know her.
I knew
yeah.
her name, but I wouldn't know any of her music specifically, but
right.
I knew her name.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
well,
name.
Well, that's cool. So yeah, I'm glad you knew her name. Like, seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
But she performed, she started playing trombone when she was 7. And then within a year, she was soloing on the local radio station, which from what I understand about brass, it's like, you don't really learn it in a year.
Oh, no,
usually,
no, no.
Right?
7-year-old brass musicians are a nightmare.
I mean.
you don't have the musculature built
I've
up.
I've heard,
in your,
yeah. Well,
you date a trumpet player.
Yeah, he was like, my chops didn't, you don't do it and you suck for 3 years is what he said. I don't know, his words not
But
mine.
They worked the kids hard back then.
Yeah,
they
must have. I mean, who knows? Well, she was working by the time she was 16. 16, she had joined a union for professional musicians in L.A. And she played with Dizzy Gillespie, Count Basie, Dexter Gordon, and he actually composed Mischievous Lady in her honor. So that's a tribute to Liston.
Dexter Gordon?
Dexter Gordon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. So she took a little time off from the work that she faced so much, of course, in terms of racism, misogyny, abuse, discrimination, sexual assault, all kinds of, you can only imagine. I can only imagine. But she did take some time off and worked for the LA Board of Education. But in 1958, she recorded her one and only record as a band leader, which is called Melba Liston and Her Bones. So I don't know if we can find that, so we'll
That's
have to
awesome.
Check
so
that one out.
So tell us about the cocktail. What is the...
Oh, sure. And this one's a great one to try at home. So it's Mischievous Lady. It's 4 ingredients. So I waitressed and bartended for 15 years, and I was like... I'm like good at like a 4-ingredient cocktail. Like I'm here for 4 ingredients.
I'm terrible at it. All my cocktails have like 9
have so
ingredients. And they all taste the same.
but this one was created... I don't know if I made it clear, but what we did was we took the notes about all these women and sent them to working female bartenders all across the world, actually. Thank you, Facebook. Again, it's funny, timing is everything. So if we didn't have that social network at the time, 2007, it wouldn't really have worked out. But we were connected with an amazing woman named Jemima McDonald, and she runs Earl's Juke Joint in Newtown, New South Wales, Australia. So her drink... is 1.5 ounces of gin, 1/2 ounce of sloe gin, 1/2 ounce of maraschino liqueur, 1 bar spoonful of punti mace, and 1 dash of lemon bitters. Yeah.
I can make that.
You can do it.
I
you
have
can
all those
do
things.
It. You guys can all do it. You can go to a bar and show it to the bartender. So that's stirred is how she builds it. And then she strains it into a Nick and Nora glass, which is a fun, very popular style of like cocktail glass.
So wait, quick follow-up question. You said you could bring the book into a bar and show it to the bartender and ask the bar. How does that go over?
I don't know. I mean,
At least you've introduced them to the book, right?
Yeah. Like when I worked in the bar, if people gave me a recipe, I would be happy to make it because who
cares?
As long
as they might add it to their repertoire.
Yeah. I mean, if you said, no, you did it wrong, they might be like, later days.
So how is the book selling? What's the reaction?
It's been great. It's been fantastic. The reaction has been so, so it's so funny because, you know, you need one yes, right? You need one good, you know, in a sea of no's, you need like the one right yes. So the way our publisher founder was, they found our old blog and they were like, we think there might be a book here. And we were like, that's funny. Here's my proposal. But from the jump, everybody at their publishing house was so supportive. Like they were just like, thought it was the best idea. And so from there and then beyond, like in terms of the sales team, they were very supportive from what I understand. And people have really enjoyed it. I have a lot of people tell me that they're buying it for gifts. And that's like really sweet, giving it to their mom or their cousin or sister. A lot of men buying it for women and, you know, vice versa, actually. Like anybody who's a history buff might really enjoy this as well. So cocktails or history.
Absolutely. It is such a fantastic idea. Are there plans for a sequel or what are you working on
now? We're talking about another one. So if you're clicking on Amazon, that helps us, I guess. I didn't mention this. The books that we sell, Misty and I, in events like this, and if you see us about town, we are donating the proceeds of those books to charity. So all of them, yeah, which has been fun. So we've supported Jane Doe, which is a local organization here that supports women. They do policy work, mostly addressing sexual assault and domestic violence in Massachusetts. We did a big fundraiser for RAIN, R-A-I-N-N, in Asheville. So we've been able to travel as well, which is really, really cool.
So, so cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
To see amazing, interesting people realizing their dreams in this marvelous city of ours.
Thank
you, Kitty, for showing up tonight and for joining us. And please give it up for our dear friend Kitty Allen. And do you have copies of the book with you?
I do have some copies.
Great. So see her after.
If you're interested.
It is so, so wonderful. So
thank you
so much, Kitty. Yeah. So, so cool. And I've made a few of the drinks in that book, and they are absolutely delectable. I'm going to make the Mel Ballista one tonight. Yeah. Folks, our next performer came to us as a result of an email. Not always, you know, not usually email doesn't produce wonderful things, but this one did. From our friend Anthony, who runs a Razor's Barbershop on Highland Avenue in Somerville. He first heard this man play in Nashville, and he could not wait to get him up here to introduce him to Boston. It has been our pleasure to present him at our tap room in Somerville. He has also played in my classroom at Boston College, which has been a real treat for my undergraduate students. And he will be reappearing, if you dig his music, and I know you will, he'll be reappearing again this Saturday night at 8 p.m. at the Aeronaut Tap Room in Somerville. Simply put, my friends, he has one of these voices that you will never, ever forget. Please put your hands together for a literal force of musical nature joining us all the way from Nashville, Tennessee, the one and only Mr. Jay Edwards.
Well, thank you. Have you up all day? Writing down lines to love songs. Oh, you're turning out the lights and spending lots of time in the dark. If your heart's begging you to move on, but you know you can. You know that's what a bad woman can do to a good man. You may find yourself on a bar stool drinking over 10 a.m. And you got no one to call cause you turned your back on all of your good friends. If you're trying to figure out how the things you love fell out of your hands, then you might understand that's what a bad woman could do to a good man. If you're running blind, that's the worst kind of wasting. Cause she offered you the devil's fruit and helped you taste it. If you're walking around out in the rain without a plan, you know that's what a bad woman can do to a good man. over 10 a.m. And you got no one to call, 'cause you turn your back on all of your good friends. If you're trying to figure out how the things you love fell out of your hands, then you might understand that's what a good woman can do to a good man. She might even take you places you've never been. What a bad woman can do to her good man. You may find yourself on a bar stool drinking every 10 a.m. And you got no one to call, 'cause you turn your back on all of your good friends. If you're trying to figure out how the things you love just fell out of your hands, and you might understand that's what a bad woman can do to a good man. Oh, that's what a bad woman does to a good man. This is another one off the brand new record, just came out here recently. The album's called Cold, and it just is. Ooh, let's talk about it. But you said ain't nothing. Let's don't just walk around it, 'cause you know that I've been hurting. When I see the people out on the street, see them whisper out of hurt their eyes, there's a whole lot of nothing going on, something ain't right. Ooh, explain it now. It ain't nothing. Don't just try and work it out. You know that I still love you, but I'm always running way behind in my questions. You're already working on your next alibi. There's a whole lot of nothing going on. Something ain't. Say nothing is wrong. You just don't want to fight. Ain't nothing going on that is settled in my mind. But you're always on the telephone when you're out alone, and I hear you softly say your name. There's a whole lot of nothing going on. Something ain't right. Ooh, won't you listen to me? You said ain't nothing. You talk convincingly, but I still think you're busted. Always making plans with your besties, but you can't be bowling skirt that high. There's a whole lot of nothing going on. Something ain't right. Well, you say nothing is wrong. You just don't want to fight. All alone, and I hear you softly say your name. There's a whole lot of but something ain't right.
Wow. The one and only Mr. Jay Edwards. Give it up. Jay's got another, he's got another gig to get to, right? It's about 200 feet behind us, so he'll be playing over on the stage there, so please come out. Well, folks, that's a wrap on our fourth and final episode here at the Aeronaut Alston Beer Garden and our first season of Lower Alston Live at beautiful Zone 3 on Western Avenue in Lower Alston. We hope to see you out here again next summer. Huge thanks, as always, to all the awesome folks who make this show happen. Stage Mama, Alex Birch. Everyone say hi to Alex, even though she's not here tonight. Hi, Alex! Technical Wizard, Kevin O'Connell. The dude, who brilliantly edits these live recordings down into a podcast that simply sparkles with clarity. Also, tonight's can-do stand-in producer, Palace Shaw. Intern Isabel Hibbert. Yeah. Dennis Casey from Comedy Party. All our friends at Zone 3 and all of our Aeronaut team, including our bartenders. We invite you to stick around for some more live music tonight. Jay's going to kick off his full set outside at 8:30 or 8:40. You can check out our prior three episodes by Googling PRXLA Live. And join us for the release of this show as a podcast sometime soon. Join us also for the Aeronaut Alston season closing party tomorrow night. Everyone go boo. Featuring Francesca Blanchard and Aubrey Haddard, plus our annual Oktoberfest celebration all day on Saturday, September 21st. Can we have one more huge round of applause for tonight's LA Live Episode 4 guests? Laura Samerse, Phil Berman, Bart Thompson, Kitty Ahmad, Jerrell and Tim of Bodega, Sadie Gustafson-Sook and Mary Campbell, and Mr. Jay Edwards. We love you all and we appreciate the hell out of you. And now, one last time, take us away, Phil Berman!
LA, LA, LA Live. Everybody grab a seat for LA Live.
LA Live.
Western Ave and Harvard Street for LA Live.
LA Live.
When the weight of the world's exhausting, take a ticket to Lower Alston.